accession number 12165, real 1.
Captain Masson, real 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
In Hull. Newland Avenue. 1917.
You were born in Newland Avenue?
Yes.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a master mariner.
So, do you come from a long line of...
Yes, quite a long line.
How far can you trace it back?
I have a family tree outside in the hall. I'm just a bit vague about the dates, but I can find it for you.
Did you go to school in Hull?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
Sidmouth Street Elementary School and Trinity House Nautical School.
So you decided to go to sea from an early age?
I was told I was to go to sea at an early age.
Was your father quite strict about it?
Yes.
Why was he so insistent?
Well, he didn't want the line broken.
Were you happy about going to sea?
Yes, quite happy.
What did you think about the education you got at Trinity House?
Excellent. It meant that I was well versed in a lot of nautical knowledge before I ever started to go to sea.
Can you give some examples of what type of things you knew about?
The navigation right up to the Mark St. Hilaire and various other types of navigating vessels, course in seamanship, signalling.
How old were you when you left nautical college?
15 and a half.
Did you have any paper qualifications when you left?
Only the note from the headmaster to say you'd carried out the course and been an apt pupil.
Did you go straight to sea?
Yes.
Can you tell me about it?
Well, it was a time of depression, as it is now, and I was told to buy a journal of commerce and go down the name of every ship owner and write to them, telling them I wanted to go to sea and would they take me on one of their ships. I got one reply from 32 letters. Andrew Weirs of Glasgow said they would take me if I reported to their office on a certain date, ready to go to sea. And I did. I went down to London, reported to their office in Bury Street, and I was at sea, not at sea, but I joined a ship that afternoon.
Which year was this?
1933.
Were they a good firm to work for?
Very good, very good.
Why were they so good?
Because they didn't give you so much book work, they gave you the practical work to do. We did everything that a seaman did aboard a ship whilst we were with them for 4 years. We caulked decks, we chipped and we scraped paint, we painted, we renewed rigging, we climbed down the ship, round the ship's bottom when she was in dry docks. And everywhere we went, we learned something.
How were you treated by the officers on board?
Very well, very considerate men. A mixture of races. There was Southern Ireland, Northern Ireland, Welshmen, Scotsmen mostly. One or two Englishmen, even one Yorkshireman. On the three ships that I was on, one after the other. They all took an interest in the apprentices. We weren't cadets, we were apprentices. We were bound apprentice for 4 years. They saw to our health and our behaviour, everything that parents would do, really.
Which parts of the world did you visit before the war?
Tramping. That's the best way you can put it. Wherever there was a trade, the ships went. Mostly India, South America, Australia, Pacific Islands, East Indies, West Indies, occasionally to America.
How was the British Merchant Marine regarded in those days of the 1930s throughout the world?
Mostly they were looked down on as seamen. Seamen were a race apart, of course, in those days, especially to the British in India. They had no time at all for us. We weren't allowed in their clubs. But the Australians loved us. So did the South Africans. The Canadians were a bit standoffish. The Europeans also were a bit standoffish. And that's really all I could say about foreign people's attitudes to British merchant seamen.
Why should the South Africans and Australians have been so different?
Well, they were British stock, I think, and I mean, they've always had a great regard for their home country. And anybody they found wandering about their cities or ports turned out to be British, they immediately befriended them.
What did you think of the professionalism of the officers who manned the Andrew Weir ships in the 30s?
Well, very highly. They were all good seamen.
What were you doing when the war broke out?
Actually, I was in hospital having a broken ankle repaired, and they cleared the hospitals, of course, expecting high casualty lists, and sent me home, and I recuperated at home until the local firm I was working for at the time, the Wilson Line, sent for me to go to sea in January 1940. And I joined one of their ships, and that was my first wartime sailing.
This is Ellerman Wilson's?
Yes, Ellerman Wilson Line of Hull.
How was your status as a merchant seaman affected by the outbreak of war? Were you under regimentation by the government?
No. We just carried on doing the same job. You joined the same ship as you'd left, probably. You were with the same people. The only people who were really affected were the masters of the ships who had to liaise with the Navy. But it wasn't until we got into convoy that going to sea was any different from what it used to be. There was station keeping and there was more signalling, and you had to do as you were, the ships had to do as they were told by the Commodore. So you were in effect regimented in a convoy.
Who was the Commodore?
There were various Commodores. Each convoy that sailed had a Commodore and his staff aboard one of the ships, and they took charge of the whole thing, the whole convoy and the escort. And they, of course, were in touch with Whitehall.
Was the Commodore Royal Navy?
Oh, yes. Usually a retired, high-ranking Navy man.
So he obviously didn't necessarily have the rank of Commodore?
No. We just called him the Commodore of the convoy. He could have been a Rear Admiral when he was active and had come back, what we called a dugout, to take these convoy Commodore jobs.
What did you mean by a dugout?
A man who retired and came back for the war, to do war service when he needn't to. Over the age for joining up, but volunteered.
What was the first ship that you sailed on in the war?
The old Cavallo.
How do you spell it?
C-A-V-A-L-L-O.
Was it the SS Cavallo?
Yes, the SS Cavallo, yes.
Can you describe her to me?
She was a steamship built for special trades. In other words, she wasn't built to go long distances, across the Atlantic or to the Baltic. Occasionally, they could go through the canal to India. But there were no means tramp ships. They were what they call liner ships. Not liners as you think of a passenger liner, but as a cargo liner. It was always on the same run. And they ran to a time schedule and thereby could charge higher freights.
What about the crew, its size and where they came from and their experience?
The crew were usually local men. The Wilson Line men recruited in Hull and various adjacent districts, Goole, even Whitby. But usually they were local men from Hull. They were in the region of 30 to 35 men in the crew. Engine room staff, deck staff and catering staff. There was a master and three mates, usually three engineers, a radio officer, bosun, carpenter and able-bodied seaman. Steward and his assistants. Firemen, because these ships were coal burning in those days, there's usually three firemen on a watch, and there were three watches through the day.
When did you say you joined her?
In January 1940.
What were living conditions like on board?
Well, for the time, they were average. There were no drying rooms as such. There were no laundry machines. You did your washing in a bucket. You dried it on a line stretched on deck. The food was plain. And as they said, sufficient without waste. You've got no clothing allowance or clothes. You found your own kit. Even found your own mattress at one time. Knives, forks and spoons were all your own.
What rank did you hold in January 1940?
Third officer, third mate.
And what was your first wartime voyage?
We sailed from Hull for a voyage to the Mediterranean via London.
What was it like sailing down the east coast in wartime?
It hadn't got too bad just then, but it did get a bit hairy later on. After a couple of years, when the bombing started and the shelling in the channel and the E-boats off the Wash, then it was a bit hairy, but at the beginning, it wasn't too bad.
What happened on that voyage?
We just went to the Mediterranean, discharged our cargo, and went round loading another cargo, and we came back without any incident.
And then?
Then we reloaded again for the Mediterranean. And it was a repeat of the previous voyage. We were issued with two rifles, that was the armament. They said they were for potting at mines. And we loaded a full cargo of hay and three large crates. The crates were Swordfish aeroplanes for Malta. There was the fuselage, the wing section and the tail section. That was one Swordfish, whether it was Faith, Hope or Charity, I'm not quite sure which, but it was one of them. We were reconnoitred by a Focke-Wulf condor on the way down the bay, but we reached Gib and went on to Malta to unload the three crates and proceeded peacefully to Haifa with the hay, which was for the cavalry that was then stationed in Palestine, as it was. Return voyage was via Latakia, Istanbul, Yugoslavia, and Messina.
So you delivered one of the famous three planes
three
to Malta?
Yeah.
Who delivered the other two?
That I don't know. They were there already, I think. This may have been a replacement or an extra one.
And so you didn't meet the enemy at all?
No, only the aeroplanes, which they told us were based in Spain, the German Fokker Wolf Condors. They came and had a look at us, but there was nothing. Nothing came from that.
Do you remember the month that you delivered the Swordfish aircraft to Malta?
No.
Sometime in 1940?
Yes. Oh, yes. I would think so.
What do you remember happening next to you? You've got your discharge book with you, and you can now tell me when it would have been that you delivered the Swordfish aircraft to Malta.
Yes, we left London on the 4th of April 1940. So we would be in Malta probably 10 days later.
What do you remember happening to you next?
Having loaded homeward from Turkey and Greece, we were passing Sicily when the second mate heard on his own radio that Italy had come into the war on the German side. We were very close to Italy at the time, and the captain opened his sealed envelope, which would tell him what to do in the event of a neutral nation becoming belligerent. And it told him to make for the nearest neutral port. This was a case of turning back quickly and making for Greece, because we couldn't have got on to France with the Germans around. So we went back and arrived in Kalamata to wait further orders. We spent quite a while in Kalamata, welcomed by the Greeks, but not by the Italian consul, who brought pressure to bear on the Greeks to turn us out. Eventually they had to make us go, and we sailed from Kalamata and we joined a convoy which was forming off Crete. We returned to Alexandria and were taken over by the Navy as a hired transport. They fitted us with a 12-pounder gun and some 40 shells, half of them anti-submarine and half of them anti-aircraft. And they put us in what they call the inshore squadron. This was some small ships that were out there and couldn't get home, were used for carrying supplies up the North African coast behind the 8th Army to supply them as they advanced. The three ports we used were Derna, Salloum, and Tobruk. In Tobruk, we loaded Italian prisoners of war. We put them all over the ship, in the cargo spaces and on the decks, and we received four armed soldiers to guard them. You can imagine we got back to Alexandria as fast as we could to get rid of these fellas. And we were then sent to Greece and Turkey again on a shuttle service to load produce from these countries, bring it to Alexandria and discharge it into the bigger ships that had come round the Cape and were going back home. And from them we loaded certain supplies for the Greeks and went back with it, and this carried on for quite some time. The Italian bombers got the wind of it, and we were regularly bombed at 11 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and 7 o'clock in the evening. Sometimes it looked as if it was the same planes that were just going backwards and forwards from Scarpanto or Rhodes, refueling, loading up, and coming back and dropping a few bombs on these little ships that they saw on the shuttle service.
Which months were these?
That I couldn't tell you. As you appreciate, we weren't allowed to carry cameras, we weren't allowed to keep diaries in case we were captured. And these would have been of vital importance to the enemy. So it was just this, during this 2 years, that these things happened. And I have no idea of the dates. Just I know when we got caught, when we sailed there, out there, and when we got back home. And this, it was very boring, actually, this going backwards and forward, because these Italians never hit us. And we knew what time they were coming, we were ready for them. The shout went up, somebody heard an aircraft engine in the distance and said, "Here the buggers come again." And they dropped their bombs and turned for home again, and they were happy and we were sort of happy. We were laid in Port Said on one occasion, facing the naval headquarters, when the Battle of Britain was taking place. And some of the Navy ratings in the headquarters got a huge blackboard, erected it on the quayside outside the Navy House, and put the scoreboard on, 185-6, whatever it was that day. And that's how we kept our tally on the Battle of Britain. Eventually, the invasion of Greece took place by the Germans, and things hotted up then.
You give the impression that the Italian aircraft were just making a kind of genuflection at bombing, that they weren't really serious.
And so was the Italian army, wasn't it? Yes. Yes, they weren't serious about it. They kept a good height. We couldn't have reached them with our 12-pounder.
How close did the bombs come, though?
Well, they weren't near enough to splash you. If there were three or four ships, they would invariably fall between the ships.
So they never hit anything?
No, I never saw the Italians hit anything at all.
Sorry, I interrupted you with you saying that the Germans invaded Greece.
That's right. And when we got back to Port Said or Alexandria, I forget which one it was, that voyage, they loaned us two Hotchkiss guns. That was to fire at German aircraft. And we loaded 25-pounder shells, a full cargo, 2,000 tonnes of 25-pounder shells, which were to go up to northern Greece to supply the New Zealand artillery, which were holding the Germans at Thermopylae. But of course, by this time we'd got down to about 4 knots due to weed on the bottom of the ship and poor coal, and our crew weren't as enthusiastic as they had been. We'd lost some of them to other ships. We had two Greek firemen with two Egyptian sailors, and we're a motley lot, really. There were even two desert rats. The Royal Irish Hussars, who had been sent with us for a trip because they were so covered with desert sores that they could hardly get in and out of a tank any longer. So they were sent with us for a trip. And I, for one, am pretty pleased they came with us.
Why?
They did good work later on, as I will be able to tell you, helping us. One of them had a little dog with him, a little Jack Russell pup, and that dog went with him all the time. We got as far north as we could with these shells, and we ended up in Piraeus, laid, as is usual in the Mediterranean ports, with two anchors down ahead of you and your ropes from the stern to the quay. And we laid there waiting for somebody to come and take the shells from us that it amounted to. One night there was a terrific air raid. The Clan Fraser, a British ship that was laid across the harbour from us, was hit by a bomb and blown up. It was then considered time to get out of Piraeus.
What was the explosion like of the Clan's?
Oh, it was a huge explosion. It sort of deafened you temporarily, and the fireworks were going up in the sky as the ammunition exploded. And the worst of it was, some of it was coming down again. And it was a bit dicey laid there. Anyway, it was decided that we should move from the main harbour and slide round to the back of the island to a place called Eleusis. There was a short jetty there. And again, we anchored and tied stern to the jetty. Because of its shortness, we could only discharge half the ship at once. It was intended that we should discharge the after end of the ship, turn around and discharge some out of the forward end till she levelled up by trim, and then start turn around again and carry on like this until we'd got all the shells out. There were, I don't know if you'd say, a wing of hurricanes just inland from Eleusis. Four hurricanes used to go up when the Germans came over bombing and did their best, but the Germans followed them down. And when they landed in Eleusis airport or airstrip, the Germans bombed them and machine gunned them, and eventually there were no hurricanes left. By this time, we were to leave Eleusis and go to Nauplia, because the British army was being evacuated from Nauplia as the Germans were overrunning